This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
New tech leaders. The hottest sector this year has been led by the best-known megacaps, but now there are new names leading the way. Record high. Newly built homes are more expensive than ever, and builders are having a tough time breaking ground. But there may be a solution. Diving in. Why private insurers are getting into the flood insurance market after a 50-year absence. Those stories and a lot more tonight on Nightly Business Report for this Friday, June the 23rd. Good evening, everybody. TGIF. I'm Bill Griffith. Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera are both off tonight. Technology's back on top. The same sector that led the way this year earlier posted its first weekly gain in three this week. The Nasdaq climbed today for the fourth straight session, and energy shares helped the S&P snap its losing streak. The Dow, when all was said and done, fell by 2.5 points today to 21,394. The Nasdaq added 28, though. S&P rose by nearly 4 points. And as you can see, the Nasdaq easily outperformed the other major averages for the week. But there's a switch happening right now within the tech sector. The run-up this year had been led by the big names, you know, the FANG stocks, the Facebooks and Amazons and Googles. Now a new group of names are taking charge. Kim Forrest, the senior equity strategist at Fort Pitt Capital, joins us tonight to talk about that. You know, Kim, we had almost 2 weeks ago that tech wreck, and I guess maybe had people looking elsewhere for new leadership. Where are they looking? What are they looking for, do you think?
Well, I think anytime you're investing, you're looking for growth. And if you're investing in tech, you're really looking for growth. So some of the themes that are behind this have what in common? Growth. So I think a couple of the leaders have to do with online paycheck or pay stub calculations, that sort of thing. So that would be ADP and paychecks. And I think people are looking for more hiring to go on this year, and that would be a logical conclusion if you're buying those stocks.
Other stocks that you're looking at that you consider new leadership here, Gartner Group. Why that one?
The Gartner Group, well, they're kind of interesting because they're tech related. And what they do is they give advice to businesses who are going to put in new technologies. And just like the rest of us, even though they might have a staff of IT people, you need some help. So they're kind of like the consumer reports for technology for business. And again, if you're going to be putting a lot of money into your business tech, why not get a subscription to Gartner and get the right stuff the first time?
Citrix in enterprise software. There are a bunch of companies in that category. Why that one?
They are. Well, I think Citrix has a real leadership, and what it allows you to do is to remotely connect to your servers back at the mothership wherever you work. And even though we are going to the cloud, some things just don't translate that well. So Citrix does have leadership in connecting kind of older servers to people that are mobile.
And then a common name we often hear, but AMD. Why are you picking them right now?
AMD? AMD is a, they're kind of second banana to Intel, but they have a new technology that seems to be beating Intel. And, you know, again, we love any kind of growth. So AMD, whose fortunes had been pretty bad, you know, they've turned it around because of the new product line. And a lot of people seem to be buying their chip instead of Intel's.
Kim Forrest at Fort Pitt Capital, always good to see you. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
You bet. You know, most would agree that one of the hottest parts of the economy has been housing. And today we learned that prices of newly built homes hit a record. Sales rose in May despite a shortage of homes for sale. Builders say that they would like to put up more homes, but they're just facing tight regulations on land use, which is only driving their costs even higher. But a new trend in townhomes could be the solution. Diana Olick has our story for us tonight.
They may not be as swanky as single-family homes, but townhomes are taking off in today's tight real estate market.
This seems to be a general philosophy by local governments to increase density and be more efficient with land uses.
Like here in this Maryland suburb just south of the nation's capital, where empty land is scarce. Mid-Atlantic Builders is taking advantage of every square foot.
So they're really encouraging more townhome and even products where you have rental mixed in, higher density, because the typical suburban single-family home is going to be harder and harder to find land for, particularly in maturing metropolitan areas like Washington.
Demand for newly built homes is high, especially as the number of existing homes for sale keeps hitting new lows. Builders are increasing production slowly, but are still well below historical levels. The median price of a home sold in May hit a new record high, despite builders claiming they're targeting the first-time buyer. Clearly, they can't afford to. Builders say new regulations not only add huge costs, but slow the process as well. Permitting can take months, especially in major metropolitan areas like here in D.C. Townhomes are a way around that, as local governments encourage builders to put up more units on less land. Townhomes may be less private, but they are more affordable for both developers and buyers. In today's tight market, that's something to build on. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Washington.
Elsewhere, a Federal Reserve official said today that the central bank can hold off on further interest rate increases until it is clear that inflation is heading higher and when there's more clarity on fiscal policies out of Washington. James Bullard says that he sees little reason to rush the process, and he's not worried about the tight labor market triggering higher inflation anytime soon. General Motors has reached a settlement to resolve lawsuits over its defective ignition switches. According to a court filing, that deal addresses the more than 200 plaintiff cases. Terms of the settlement, though, are confidential, but it could also resolve hundreds of other claims. The ignition switch defect has been linked to more than 100 deaths and hundreds of injuries, and it prompted a recall that began early in 2014. To date, GM has paid about $2.5 billion in penalties and settlements related just to that defect. Healthcare stocks were big winners this week, rising more than 3%. As we reported, most of that game came yesterday when the Senate released a draft version of its own healthcare bill. And today, the draft was examined even further. As our Bertha Coombs reports now, winners and losers are emerging.
The Senate plan repeals individual and employer taxes, which funded Obamacare's expanded coverage. That benefits those with higher incomes. The plan leaves many of the Affordable Care Act's provisions in place, but with less generous funding. President Trump may have put it best.
It's a very complicated situation from the standpoint you do something that's good for one group but bad for another. It's a very, very narrow path.
Among the losers, adults who gained coverage under Medicaid expansion. The Senate plan would maintain funding through 2020, but then make states pick up more of the tab before ending it. Middle-income earners making above 350% of federal poverty, about $41,000 for an individual this year, would get no premium tax credits after 2020. For older adults, that could mean a triple whammy. The Senate plan would allow insurers to charge them five times more than younger people. Right now, rates are capped at three times more. The bill also increases how much older people have to chip in for premiums, from 9.5% of their income to as much as 16%. While tax credits would be lower, indexed to the lowest-tiered bronze plans rather than more generous mid-tier plans now. People with pre-existing conditions would not face a premium surcharge under the Senate plan, and some shut out would get a new benefit. Among the winners, the working poor would be eligible for tax credits, filling the gap for 2.6 million people who earn less than poverty level but weren't covered when their states chose not to expand Medicaid. Insurers would be able to offer younger adults lower premiums and skinnier plans in states that opt out of essential health benefits. And people with health savings accounts would be able to nearly double savings to $6,600 a year for individuals and $13,300 for families, more in line with high deductible costs. An industry spokeswoman says those measures will help the industry offer more affordable plans. Critics argue lower subsidies and the end of the mandate will cancel that out.
You're going to get a lot more people in these plans, but they're going to be a lot sicker, and you're going to have a lot fewer healthy people in the plan, so there'll be no balance. So you'll see very rapid increases.
The Congressional Budget Report estimated that the House plan would result in 23 million people being uninsured by 2026. The CBO score of the Senate bill is due Monday. Bertha Coombs, Nightly Business Report.
And still ahead, you up for a challenge? Picking stocks while the market is near record levels is never easy, but our market monitor tonight has some ideas you might want to consider. Boeing is cutting 200 jobs at a plant in South Carolina. That's the same plant where President Trump gave a speech a few months ago. The company says the layoffs are part of a company-wide plan announced back in December, and they come as competition intensifies with rival Airbus. Boeing has been reducing staff since the start of this year, primarily through buyouts and attrition. Hurricane season brings renewed attention to flood insurance. You know, for decades, the flood insurance program has been solely run by the government. But that's starting to change. Morgan Brennan explains.
Private insurers are taking the plunge into the turbulent waters of flood insurance. For the first time in five decades, companies are underwriting coverage for homes and businesses, marking a potential shift for a marketplace solely run by the government since 1968.
It's a very strong business opportunity. The technology has changed. The industry is much better at measuring risks on flood insurance than they were years ago. And as a result, they're very interested in pursuing that opportunity. So it could grow and grow.
Better tech, but also more favorable regulations. That started in 2012 with the Biggert Waters Act, the last big attempt to reform the federal flood insurance program. House lawmakers are now looking to build on that with five bills that would make it easier for insurers to compete, a move that could, at least in theory, bring down rates and prevent more taxpayer losses. It's a more than $3 billion opportunity on 5 million properties, many underpriced or even subsidized, that are covered by the troubled government program.
Right now, because of Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Sandy and the losses from that, the federal flood insurance program has a deficit of $25 billion to the U.S. Treasury. By contrast, the private insurance market in the United States has $700 billion that, for any risk that's written in private flood insurance, would be available to help pay claims if anything came in.
AIG's Lexington Insurance began offering policies last year. It currently touts 10,000, but expects that to double over the next 12 months. Chubb, Allianz, and Swiss Re have also jumped in. And just this week, HCI announced plans to expand operations beyond Florida to 9 more states.
And it isn't the low-risk properties that are even the most attractive. For many insurers, it's the ones that have already experienced big rate hikes, since companies say they can now better compete, offering comparable rates, speedy service, and even more coverage. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Morgan Brennan.
Weak enterprise sales hurt results at BlackBerry, and that's where we begin tonight's market focus. The software maker posted an unexpected profit, but that news was overshadowed by a sales miss that left investors wondering if the company's turnaround strategy is actually working. Looking past the disappointing revenue, the company did say it is open to considering acquisitions in a couple of areas.
So I think the whole cybersecurity, especially the whole newer area of machine learning, as it related to cybersecurity, we're already a leader in that space, and you know, we really would like to add more capability and features there. The other area is about expanding the channel and the reach for our auto business and our asset tracking business.
Clearly, Wall Street wasn't buying it, though. They sent shares down 12% to $9.71 in today's trade. Sales edged lower at Finish Line as the footwear retailer struggled with getting a steady flow of customers into their stores. Those results missed expectations, but its profit matched analyst estimates. Company's largest shareholder, Sports Direct International, which is the UK's biggest software retailer, is also upping its stake in Finish Line to nearly 20%. Finish Line shares ended the day up about 7% to $13.65. And the FDA approved Portola Pharmaceuticals' blood thinner that is intended to help prevent deep vein thrombosis and pulmonary embolisms in patients who are at risk for those conditions. Company said that the treatment is the first of its kind, and boy, did the market embrace that today. Shares soared by 46%, closed at $56.06. Analysts at Deutsche Bank cut their rating on heavy equipment maker Caterpillar first thing this morning to hold from buy, citing concerns over whether the Trump administration's $1 trillion infrastructure plan will actually take effect. The bank said that without an infrastructure stimulus, there is little prospect for continued construction growth right now. Caterpillar shares, though, rose fractionally on the day to $104.11. Now to our market monitor, who is saying that he's finding investment opportunities both here in the U.S. and overseas. Steve Dudash is with us tonight. He's president of IHT Wealth Management. Steve, good to see you again. Welcome back.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Good. It's interesting. Just a few minutes ago, we were talking with another money manager about the tech wreck we saw a couple weeks ago and how she sees new leadership in technology. But you're sticking with one of the primary FANG stocks right now. Even at all these near all-time highs, you like Amazon here. Why?
2.5 years ago, I was on the show with you guys, and we were talking about Amazon, and we were talking about how it's really expensive and overvalued and all that. And we were being contrarian, and we're saying, you got to buy in. They're a disruptor. See past the pricing. Everything they get into, they take over, and they grow from that area. Fast forward 2 years, stock's up 50%, and the arguments are the same. It's too expensive. The reality is they change the markets that they get into. And you know who should be watching their backs right now is Whole Foods, because they're coming for, or not Whole Foods, but Walmart, because they're coming for them. Everything they touch grows. So, yes, it's expensive. Yes, it is a tough stock to swallow the pricing that you're getting into. But the reality is if you want growth and you can handle the risk, there's literally no better stock out there in the growth-oriented world right now that has the potential to continue to grow in the next couple of years.
All right. And Walmart did say today that they are not going to make a competing bid for Whole Foods against Amazon. We should point that out. Now, there is at least one sector you like that's not at all-time highs. That's the banks. You're here to make the case for a certain bank ETF. Why? Right? Why now?
You know what? Let me start with by this. I want to compliment you guys for taking the time to talk about the ETF world. You're leading the market. This is what the industry is going towards. Most people aren't stock picking anymore. They're buying ETFs. So for you guys to be talking about it, I think is wonderful. But yes, the fundamentals are changing on them. Interest rates are rising, which we all know, which is a good thing. And it helps those smaller banks a lot more that have been struggling through it. But two, about a year and a half ago, we were on these shows and we were talking about the regulatory market that we were in was at all-time highs of strictness that was going on with these banks. That pendulum has definitely swung. Now, it hasn't swung as much as we would have guessed with a Republican president, Republican Congress, but it's definitely going back that direction. And that, on top of the rising interest rates, is going to help those bottom lines. So we're shying away from the big banks right now because some of the headline risks with it. But if you look at an ETF, regionals, spread your risk out within that sector, that might be one of those sectors that's going to be one of the biggest gainers in the next couple of years.
Okay. Got to see rates rise, though, to help them out, though. Now, dividends are obviously very popular, especially, I think, with our audience. But you're looking for dividends not here in the U.S., but overseas in Europe. You're talking about a European dividend fund. Tell us about it.
Okay. Let's be honest. The U.S. market is probably overvalued right now. Okay. We fundamentally like strong balance sheets. We like dividends. We like growing dividends. You look overseas right now, you can buy into some companies at a much cheaper discount than what's going on in the U.S. They're in the middle of the QE cycle, so you take advantage of the fact that they've got a couple more years' worth of growth just off that end of it, and Brexit isn't going to affect Europe. Britain was never really a part of Europe in that sense anyway. The rest of those countries aren't breaking off. You're going to have some headline risk. You're going to have some political risks from time to time. You got to grin and bear it, but you want to buy into large-oriented dividend growth stocks for your portfolio as opposed to overpaying for U.S. stocks. It's a wonderful idea if you can stomach having more of your money overseas.
Right. Some good ideas tonight. Steve, always good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Bill. Take care, guys.
Steve Dudash of IHT Wealth Management. Coming up, hidden cash that's hiding in your closet. Sears is closing another 20 stores. A real estate investment trust owns those 20 properties. It includes 18 Sears and two Kmarts. These closures are in addition to the more than 200 store closures that were announced earlier this year. Sears isn't the only brand closing stores these days. The total number so far across the industry is triple what it was the same time this time last year. So far, 5,300 store closures announced in 2017. If it's time to clean out your closet, there's a way to make some cash in the process. Courtney Reagan compares two different companies that pay you back when you declutter.
Looking to refresh your summer wardrobe but don't have the cash? Well, look no further than your closet. There are plenty of websites that will help sell gently used but still in style clothes. I decided to do an unscientific test of two popular methods, an app called Poshmark and website ThredUp, to see which would earn me more money. After spending some quality time in my closet, I picked 9 pieces from brands like J. Crew, Diane von Furstenberg, and Club Monaco. Now time to sell these suckers. I discovered Poshmark works more like eBay and Facebook combined. Each item has its own listing, and creating one is time-consuming. It took hours to take pictures of the clothes, sometimes with me wearing them, then upload the images and set the price. And to sell, you need to be social, following others, commenting, and sharing your listings. Ultimately, I got offers on 4 items on Poshmark, both the J. Crew sweater and pants, the Diane von Furstenberg dress, and the Karen Millen cardigan. ThredUp is considerably less work. You order a bag for $10, and when it comes, you fill it up. The time-consuming part of ThredUp was the waiting. It took 8 weeks to get the total for my bag. In the end, ThredUp accepted 3 items: the Club Monaco dress, and the same J. Crew sweater and pants Poshmark shoppers made offers on. So what were my payouts? Poshmark takes a $2.95 commission for sales under $15 and 20% commission for sales over that, and the buyer pays the shipping. Factoring in all that, my net profit on Poshmark came to $144. ThredUp pays in 2 ways: an upfront payout for in-season items, or a percentage of the sale price ranging from 5 to 80% for off-season clothing sold on a consignment model. My net profit on ThredUp came to $13. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Courtney Reagan.
Entrepreneur Toni Ko tapped into the multi-billion dollar beauty market when she was just 25 years old, and she's built a cosmetic empire worth $500 million. Now she's eyeing the sunglass industry. Tyner Matheson has her story in tonight's How I Made My Millions.
Like these, like that big.
Today, entrepreneur Toni Ko is looking through rose-colored lenses.
I'm very grateful and I'm very happy.
It took her just 6 months to launch her second business, Perverse Sunglasses, hard on the heels of the half-billion-dollar sale of her first company, the beauty empire NYX Cosmetics. A remarkable rise by a college dropout who immigrated from South Korea to L.A. when she was only 13 and didn't speak a word of English.
I had to learn a whole new language and a whole new culture. You feel inadequate.
When she wasn't in school, Ko was behind the counter at her mom's cosmetic store.
I used to sell perfume. I worked for her from 14 years old to 25, so that's 11 years of free employment for her. She never paid me.
This shortage of pocket change led Ko to discover a gap in the market between high-end cosmetics and drugstore makeup.
Blue eyeshadows were never blue. Red lipsticks did not come out red.
Ko thought she could do it better, so in 1999, she dropped out of school and started NYX Cosmetics.
My mom had good advice for me. She said, even if you fail, it's better to have that experience when you're younger than when you're older. And then she wrote me the first investment check.
Those years of free labor finally paid off. With $250,000 from her mother, Ko developed her first products, $1.49 eye and lip pencils.
This color, 813 plush red, was one of the original colors.
In just 12 months, Ko sold 3.2 million of them, entirely on her own.
I was the receptionist, the secretary, the president, the designer. People had no idea that it was a 26-year-old running the whole show.
And often, before meeting her, no idea that she was a woman.
Every reply was Mr. Tony Ko. And then I show up and like, hi, I'm Tony. You should see the shock on their faces. This is an industry where you think there will be a lot of female executives. Really, it's not.
But Ko had one advantage in a boy's world. She was the ultimate consumer.
I really wanted to make product that I was proud to use and that my friends were proud to use.
Instead of spending on marketing like her competitors, Ko focused on making high-quality products she could sell at very low prices. And in the mid-2000s, a poorly performing product got a boost from an unexpected source, a YouTube makeup tutorial.
We just kind of went ding, 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 ding. This is the reason why this item is selling out now.
By 2014, NYX made $120 million in annual revenue. Just 15 years after launching, Ko sold NYX to L'Oreal for about $500 million. A non-compete prevented her from working in cosmetics for 5 years, so Ko set her sights on another industry she loved, sunglasses.
I'm really good at delivering really great quality at a really low price point, and I'm just going to stick with it.
Ko is hoping to nurture other female entrepreneurs as well through an investment company that she started called Butter Ventures. That's Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Bill Griffith. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you Monday.